Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. The issues of race and racism and their place in American history have been much in the news of late. On the national level, voices on the political right have launched a concerted campaign to restrict how these subjects are taught in public schools and universities. Meanwhile, here in North Carolina, state lawmakers and their appointees who oversee the UNC system waded into the issue recently when they sought to prevent Nicole Hannah-Jones, an acclaimed black journalist who's written extensively on the subject, from being awarded a tenured professorship at the UNC Chapel Hill Journalism School. Earlier this week, I got a chance to discuss these matters with an especially knowledgeable expert, historian William Sturkey. Sturkey is an associate professor at UNC Chapel Hill who specializes in the history of race in the American South, and as he told me, the latest developments don't portend well for academic freedom or the honest study of U.S. history.
Well, Professor William Sturkey, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
A couple years ago when we had you on, we talked about your book, Hattiesburg, An American City in Black and White, which is a fascinating read. I want to recommend it for anybody who's listening to this program to check that book out. Then you were reporting on a situation in a discrete American city of the Old South, some remarkable stories included in that book. But your scholarship really covers American history and the Black experience over the last century and a half, if I'm not incorrect, or maybe even more than that. And now a lot of those issues are sort of front and center in the current discourse in our country in terms of how we teach history and obviously how we accurately portray the experience of African Americans in our society. A lot of that's front and center right now. Talk to us about if you have any sort of general impressions on how this discussion and this debate are going these days in the United States. It's obviously a fraught topic, but we're glad to have an expert on who can maybe shed a little light on it.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things, I think, if you really think about the last 150 years or so since the Civil War, is that it's only been in the last very, very recent past that we've been having more honest, frank discussions about what that history meant. Before, basically for 130, 140 years, you know, it was always sort of states' rights and not slavery. It was that, you know, the white South was not at fault, that only a few people owned enslaved people. And of course, now, especially since 2015 and 2017 with Dylann Roof and Confederate monuments, that conversation has been changing a lot. And it's really only been the last 5-6 years. And I think one of the interesting things that we're having a conversation about now is, well, how much of that conversation do we really want to have? There are different states across the South, especially, that now want to ban not just what they call critical race theory, but teaching racial history in this country in ways that might make some white students feel bad, which I think is a very immature response. The white students weren't there, just like you and I weren't there. You know, it's not our responsibility, but I think that we do have an opportunity to learn. But we're starting to face these restrictions. Like in Tennessee, I saw there's a law now where school districts are going to get fined millions of dollars if they teach things like the history of segregation. And it's just so striking to me that we've only had this open, honest discussion about our history for about 5 minutes in the grander scheme of things. And we're already getting these severe restrictions for people that want to teach the history openly and honestly.
Yeah, we've actually seen, of course, legislation here in North Carolina along those lines. It's portrayed as being about, you know, we just want everything to be balanced and we don't want students to be taught that our country is a bad country. But obviously, the truth is the truth. Recently, we had journalist David Zucchino speak about his book, Wilmington's Lie, which told the story of the coup d'etat that took place in Wilmington, North Carolina at the end of the 19th century. He reported in that book that well into the middle part of the 20th century in the United States, in North Carolina, it was taught in North Carolina history books that that coup d'etat that was affected by white racist and white supremacists was actually a beneficial event that took place. And it was that the Ku Klux Klan was a group that was trying to bring order to a chaotic situation. So it's remarkable that not only we're now starting to teach some accurate history, but for a long time, we actually told lies about the history of this country and race in America right here in North Carolina. So it's really just beginning to correct that egregious situation.
Well, and the other thing is, if you go and look at the documents from the time, I mean, they're just appallingly racist. And so now, you know, we're at this moment where people say, well, let's not teach, you know, racist history. But I mean, we're basically one step away from saying you can't teach primary sources, that you can't teach the actual speeches given at the time because they are so incredibly vile.
The other thing I was struck by, of course, is when we talk about critical race theory and the great controversy that's sort of been manufactured about that subject, we get into the question of whether racism has had an impact and does continue to have a lasting impact on the lives of modern day people of color. And it seems so undeniable when you look again at the history, you look at things like the segregation that was officially a part of how loans were distributed for housing in this country as recently as the middle part of the 20th century. It seems undeniable that you can't really even teach accurate history of America if you don't delve into the issues of race and how racism had such a negative impact on so many people's lives.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many ways to look at this. I think that the most powerful way is to do, you know, exactly what you just said and to think about how this has affected every day, not just white people, but also Black people. But then, you know, there's a lot of people that want to sort of deny this, the existence of this at all. You know, like our current lieutenant governor, who basically says there's no difference between my experience and that of a white colleague. But it's just absurd to even think about that. Like, if you just go one generation back in his family's past, they lived in the Jim Crow South. If you just ask very basic questions like, why has North Carolina never had a Black governor? What are the chances in the history of this state that there's never been an African-American worthy of becoming governor? I mean, race is threaded throughout our entire history. And I think it's okay to have honest conversations. And the thing is, I don't think that the response to the new teaching is necessarily novel. A lot of what people are learning in the public sphere is pretty new, but the response is not. It's always been central to conservative thought to downplay or deny disadvantages faced by minority groups, because that suggests that then there are things you could do in the present moment to balance some of those systematic inequalities, right? Like affirmative action, which of course you can't, you know, recognize that one group has been disfranchised for 300 years, right? And then it just stopped 50 years ago and then say, well, affirmative action isn't good either, right? You have to also then deny those systematic disadvantages from the past if you're going to make a case against affirmative action in the present.
Obviously, another issue related to this topic that's been front and center in the news these days, and it obviously is directly related to your life as a scholar at UNC Chapel Hill, is that UNC Chapel Hill has been in the middle of a lot of this. We've had the recent controversy surrounding Nicole Hannah-Jones and the offer of a professorship at the journalism school that later was not, or at least for some time, was not offered in a way that she would have been granted tenure, and she ultimately declined to take on that opportunity. There's been a lot of debate about that subject. There's been a lot of reporting about the impact that that may be having on other African-American faculty members or potential faculty members at Chapel Hill. This is your lived experience, I guess, and I wonder if you have any thoughts on that and how it's affecting your work at Chapel Hill.
I have two things I really want to highlight here, my reaction. I think one of the things that a lot of people overlook as they get into like these debates about the 1619 Project and that whole issue is how she actually got tenure. Right. It is an incredibly rigorous process. It has to go through the entire journalism faculty. It then has to go through their dean and then the provost, a board, you know, appointed at our university. They read, you know, dozens of pages of documents. They read almost everything she's ever written. She has to get outside letter writers. It's a real rigorous process. And then all of a sudden, people who aren't professional journalists, right, who didn't read the full dossier, certainly, just recognize the name, come in and they vote no just based on the name. I mean, it really undermines faculty governance and faculty expertise. You know, the people in the journalism school forgot more about journalism between 9 a.m. this morning and 11 a.m. this morning than the people on the board of trustees ever knew about it. And so it's just ridiculous that people who know literally nothing about a topic can then veto the decision of an entire group of faculty, both within the UNC Journalism School and outside experts across the country. So, you know, that sort of thing is pretty ominous when thinking about, you know, tenure processes in the future. And that's related to the second thing I wanted to mention, and that one is morale has been low at the institution for a number of years, going back to Silent Sam and that whole fiasco and the settlement with the Confederate veterans and everything else. But like the other thing is that it's a real hit because it's like, okay, we're going to do one racially progressive thing. And then we have this huge backlash and then she's not coming anyway. But the other thing is that we're losing people, not just because they're upset or their feelings are hurt, We're losing people because other places are providing better opportunities than UNC is able to do. And that might be financial, it might be geographical, whatever that is. But we now have to replace those people. And how in the world are we supposed to recruit against other schools when the other schools can just say, well, look, they didn't give a Pulitzer Prize winner tenure. If you go there, you can't pursue your research with complete academic freedom. You know, I mean, we are really struggling to bring in new people based on the perceptions of us from the outside world. And I think a lot of our people at the institution who have been here a long time don't quite recognize that. But when we're on the conference circuit and things like that, when you read op-eds written by people who are at Princeton or Washington University in St. Louis or any number of places, and they're criticizing UNC Chapel Hill, you know, it's really hard to overcome some of those disadvantages because at the end of the day, they're right. Why would you come to Chapel Hill when you could go to one of our competitor schools? You go to Virginia or Emory or Vanderbilt or someplace like that, and you're not going to have your academic freedom threatened in the same way that we just literally saw.
I guess ultimately this begs the question of how we fix this situation. When we perceive that this is ultimately a function of the people that some very conservative politicians have put in charge of the university system and in turn the trustees at the various campuses, where do we go going forward? What is your hope? What are your fears about where we'll go with this current situation and perhaps how we'll make it better?
I think that the good news is that reputations take a long time to destroy in the academic world. And even though we've been taking some pretty huge hits right now, you know, UNC Chapel Hill, by and large, is still considered to be a very strong public institution. It's just we're having a problem recruiting talent right now. And I think, you know, if we were to make some sort of a commitment, you know, money talks, right? And you can recruit people if you give them resources and if you make sure that they, you know, are aware that they can practice academic freedom and free speech here. But we're not at a place where our administrators have the freedom to do that. So we sort of need like a Hail Mary, basically. You know, we need some sort of a major initiative or some cluster hires or something. You know, like at the University of Virginia, they have this new democracy initiative with some real resources and funding behind it. So we need things like that, you know, to really say, look, we're going to come out of this dark age here. But I'm just not sure that there's a will or the creativity right now in the administration in order to achieve something like that. And we have all sorts of financial problems, namely because we've been underfunded to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars by the state legislature. And it would be really helpful if we could for once get a board of trustees or a board of governors that would actually advocate for more resources on our behalf instead of just trying to punish us for the progressive things that we want to do.
It's a challenging time, and we're so glad, however, that you remain a voice of strength and sanity on these difficult issues, challenging issues. Thank you so much for your service. William Sturkey is an historian of post-1865 United States who specializes in the history of race in the American South. He's an associate professor of history at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Professor Sturkey, thanks for being with us. Good luck this coming semester, and hopefully the next time we talk, we'll talk about maybe a turnaround in some of the politics of higher education.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe for free to some of our state's best news coverage and political commentary at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, it's Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.